Today, to bail in or to bail out? That is the banking question. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. The Bank for International Settlements, the banker's banker, is worried by the current low interest rate environment, according to a new report from a committee chaired by our very own Philip Lowe, RBA Governor. It warns of the impact on financial stability across the financial services sector, with rates being so low, and with pressures on banks via net interest margins and on insurers and super funds. They warn that especially in competitive markets, risks rise in this low interest rate scenario. Low interest rates may trigger a search for yield by banks, partially in response to declining profits, exacerbating financial vulnerabilities. In addition, keeping rates low for longer may create the need to lift rates sharper later, with the risks of rising debt costs and the broader economic shock that follows. A salutary warning about financial stability and risks of banking failure. We in Australia are likely to experience the impact of higher rates quite soon. Our rates, in fact, are artificially low, and the risks of financial failures are rising. So, to a timely blog from the IMF, which sharply defines the issues around bank bailout and bail-in, should a bank fail as a result of financial system instability. We discussed bank bail-in before, and the ambiguity which has been engineered into the Australian financial system. See our post, The Bank Deposit Bail-in Conundrum. The IMF says that during the global financial crisis, policymakers faced a steep trade-off in handling bank failures. Using public funds to rescue failing banks, bailouts, could weaken market discipline and lead to excessive risk-taking, the moral hazard effect. Letting private investors absorb the losses, bail-ins, could destabilise the financial sector and the economy as a whole, the spillover effect. And last time, in most cases, banks were bailed out, but this has created public resentment and prompted policymakers to introduce measures to shift the burden of bank resolution away from taxpayers to private investors. So the IMF says resolving a failing bank should rely on bail-ins. Private shareholders should bear the losses. They advocate a resolution framework that carefully balances the moral hazard and spillover effects and improves the trade-off. Such a framework would make bailouts the exception rather than the rule. They say that not all crises are alike. Some are isolated with little or no spillover effect. In those cases, bailouts would merely create moral hazard. Resolving a failing bank should rely on bail-ins. Private stakeholders should bear the losses. Other crises are systemic and affect all corners of an economy or many countries at the same time. The destabilizing spillovers associated with bank failures in such a situation would justify the use of public resources. Moral hazard still exists, but is bearable compared to the alternative of a severe crisis that hurts all, including those without a stake in the troubled bank. So they say the framework should commit to using bail-ins in most cases and allow use of public funds only when the risks to macro financial stability from bail-ins are exceptionally severe. The best way to avoid such dilemmas is to reduce spillovers and the need for bailouts in the first place. This can be achieved through two mutually reinforcing mechanisms. The first mechanism is reducing the likelihood of crises and minimizing costs should a crisis occur. This translates into having a more resilient banking system, less leverage and risk-taking, and more capital and liquidity. Then the odds that a bank may run into trouble are smaller. And if there is trouble, the banks can absorb the losses without help from the government. The second mechanism is making the bail-in option viable. The problem is that policymakers may make the promise to bail in a troubled bank, but in a crisis, they may be tempted to bail them out. So people will not believe that bail-ins will happen and continue to expect bailouts. This, they say, is the worst of both worlds because it has spillover and moral hazard effects. So they ask, how do policymakers make a credible commitment that show there really will be bail-ins? First, ensure that banks have enough buffers to absorb losses and clarify upfront which investor claims, such as bonds and deposits, will, in the event of failure, be written down, and in what order. Second, only allow sophisticated investors who can understand and absorb the losses to hold these bail-inable claims. Third, improve systemic banks' resolvability by periodic assessments, living wills that spell out how the bank will be resolved, and domestic and cross-border drills to assess the impact of a threat. Then turning to the other side of this trade-off, how do we limit moral hazard? Well, first, credibly commit to using bailouts only in exceptional cases and on a temporary basis with a clear exit plan. Second, use public funds only after those that can absorb the losses have been bailed in. And third, recover those bailout funds after the storm has passed and ensure that all is executed in a transparent, accountable manner. Reforms since the crisis have improved the trade-off by seeking to make bail-ins a credible option and to make bailouts less likely. New frameworks, such as those in the United States and the European Union, introduce comprehensive powers to resolve banks, including through bail-ins. These measures also seek to contain spillovers from bail-ins by ensuring that banks have adequate buffers to absorb losses and aim to make them more resolvable via effective resolution planning. The IMF concluded, "We support the ongoing reform agenda and stress that resolution frameworks should minimise moral hazard. That said, we also emphasise the need to allow for sufficient, albeit constrained, flexibility to be able to use public resources in systemic crises when spillovers are deemed likely to severely jeopardise macro financial stability." Now, I've got some issues with this. The trouble is that the bail-in route, which they've defined as targeting sophisticated investors, such as super funds, effectively still means indirect risk to householders who save via, for example, their superannuation. And of course, there is the risk that even deposits could be grabbed, as is explicitly stated in New Zealand, see our post, "Are bank deposits safe in a financial crisis?" In Australia, the situation regarding deposits is very, very unclear, and we think deliberately so. The IMF argues that the risks of bail-in means prospective investors should see a premium to cover the risk in the returns they get from their investments. So we need a risk premium to be added to deposits if they are included. But it seems to me, in an attempt to deflect risks away from governments being forced to bail out a bank, once again, the end user of financial services products is effectively taking the risks and creating a moral hazard where banks and governments can pass the buck once again. If you like what you've heard here today, please like the post and add a comment or question. And if you want to join the growing band of subscribers who receive alerts when we release new posts, do subscribe now. I'm Martin North, the Principal Analyst at Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again next time.